This episode of the Friday Fix is brought to you by the ForinkJets.com coupon code Sigler14, which saves 10% and gets you free shipping on laser toner, inkjet cartridges, refill kits, and more. Did you know that printer ink is one of the top 10 most expensive fluids in the world? $2,700 per gallon. No wonder printer ink costs so damn much. Get it from 4inkjets.com and save. The coupon code SIGLER14 saves 10%, but the prices are so low at 4inkjets.com, it's like saving 35 to 40% on similar products at OfficeMax, Staples, and Amazon.com. Buy 4inkjets.com compatibles to get the same cartridges you'd get from Canon, Panasonic, HP, Xerox, Kyocera, Lexmark, Epson, and more. Pay for the quality, don't pay for the brand name. And all 4inkjets compatibles are unconditionally guaranteed for 12 months. If they don't work, send them back for a full refund. So write down that coupon code, SIGLER14, and use it at 4inkjets.com to save big. And now, on with our Friday Fix.
Welcome to the Friday Fix, where we give you news, reviews, and interviews from the world of Siglerism. An extra hit to string you out until Sunday's story. And now here's your host, Empty Set Entertainment's director of doom, a real girl herself, A. Kovacs.
I know the intro music just told you that you are listening to A Real Girl herself, but there is no A Real Girl this week. This is Scott Sigler, and I'll be your host for the Friday Fix interview of best-selling authors Naomi Novik and Peter V. Brett. I recorded them at Phoenix Comic Con 2015. They were both wicked smart and are enormously gifted at their craft. We're going to talk about outlining. We're going to talk about being a discovery writer versus being a planner. And now, here's the interview. Hello, junkies. Welcome to another Friday Fix here from Phoenix Comic Con. We are at the Westin in downtown Phoenix. You may hear some construction sounds or traffic sounds or whatnot. It's a city on the grow, like almost all cities in America these days. I'm here with two authors. I'm here with Naomi Novik.
Hello.
And Peter V. Brett.
Hi.
And we're going to talk today about something that came up in one of our panels, which is a common thing I get asked all the time from people who are writing books or want to write books. Should I outline a story or should I just let the story go where it wants to go? And in this, a fan asked this in the panel, and I discovered that Peter outlines heavily and Naomi does not outline quite as heavily, but more finds as she goes. I'll give you guys a quick background on who these people are. Naomi is the New York Times bestselling author of the Temeraire series, which is described as an epic retelling of the Napoleonic Wars, but with an Air Force of Dragons. I think that's awesome. That's all you need to know. 8 books in the series, 9th and final is due out next year, but she's here at Comic-Con promoting her brand new novel, Uprooted. Can you tell us about Uprooted?
Uprooted is a standalone novel. It's not part of a series. It is inspired heavily by the Eastern European fairy tales and folklore. I'm of Polish and Russian descent, and I grew up on those fairy tales and stories and legends. And basically, it was kind of a reconciliation of that side of my culture and background with all the English language fairy tales and the popular fairy tales from our own culture.
And that is just come out, is that right?
Yes, that just came out on May 19.
Excellent, excellent. And Peter is the author of the Demon Cycle series, which I know a lot of my fans have read and talk about in social media on our site, etc. There's 4 books in the series so far, the fourth of which, if I have this right, Skull Throne came out in March?
Yeah, March 31st.
Can you tell us about the Demon Cycle? What is that about?
So the Demon Cycle is a series set in a world where demons come out at night. The demons are mostly immune to mortal weapons, and so there's really no way to fight them. The only way to protect yourself is to draw these magical symbols called wards around your home or crops or whatever to protect yourself. And people basically huddle in fear all night, hoping the demons don't get through. And at this point, at the point in the story, the demons have sort of returned to a world that was once much like our world, very technologically advanced, and knocked it back down to, say, Little House on the Prairie levels of technology. And humanity has been hunted nearly to extinction. They live in these walled cities, like huddled through the night. And the series follows a group of characters on their life stories as each of them, as a child, is scarred by a demon attack, and that sort of drives them onto a new life path that they wouldn't have chosen before, which ends up allowing them to find a way to resist the demons. And it's sort of about humanity starting to make a comeback from the brink of extinction. Cool.
And if you guys follow him on social media, I find his fan base has a lot in common with my fan base. The wards, for Nocturnal, there's symbols in Nocturnal, and there's the various teams in the Galactic Football League. We see tattoos of these things all over the place. The wards are everywhere online. Fans are going crazy with these things, making different objects, tattoos, etc. Has that been pretty fun?
I knew this was going to be sort of... the magic system is very different from other fantasies, and I knew that going in. That was why I designed it that way. So I knew the wards were going to be a big defining thing for the series. So I hired an artist, Lauren Cannon, who is amazing. And we talked in detail about what I thought the ward should look like, and she drew a bunch of sketches, and we picked a bunch out. And so I commissioned these so that I would own the rights, and then I've sent those symbols to all of my international publishers. I'm published in 27 languages now, and I sent like a little art packet of wards to every one of those publishers. And so they all use those same symbols, and it's become sort of a unifying factor for my fans that speak different languages. They all go to my website and see those same symbols and recognize them, and it's become sort of this really defining thing about the series. And so people that really fall in love with the series, like, some of them have gotten tattoos, which is amazing.
It's very cool. Very cool. And the reason I asked you guys to be on this cast together is my fans are familiar with the longest series I have, which is the Galactic Football League, which is five big books. Since we do them ourselves, we make them as big as we want to. It's super fun. There's five of those, and it's gonna definitely be six, maybe seven. And outlining a series is a much bigger deal for me than just a single book or a book and a sequel. And Naomi, let's start with you. With such a monstrous, like eight books, I think it finishes at nine, correct?
Yes,
is that scheduled?
Right.
So you kind of shocked me yesterday in the panel saying that you don't do kind of a traditional outline. Is that correct?
No, I don't do traditional outlining, partly because to sustain my own interest and energy in a book, I need to be having an experience of discovery and exploration as I'm writing. So I try not to know too much about my world before I dive in. And obviously, you know, with the Temeraire series, it's slightly different because the world has already been defined by several of the earlier books.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when I write sort of the first book set in a world, I'm really having a very vivid kind of imaginative experience where things are happening in my subconscious as I write that I don't really want to interfere with too much by thinking about it. In fact, I've found that I've actually killed several books of my own by outlining too early in
okay.
a way.
Okay.
Where I do tend to start outlining is, you know, for instance, with Uprooted, I wrote about the first 15,000 words of the book. And then I kind of sketched out maybe like a couple of pages of where I thought the story was going overall. But that outline is a very fluid outline. I jettison large portions of it and went in slightly different directions. And in fact, as I was writing, when I got to sort of the third part, I ended up pulling out a lot of the stuff that I had for the outline at that point. And writing fresh,
and that helps keeps the words newer, or more the discovery process for you. Like, well, that's fun, and then you know your readers are going to have fun because you just learn something new. Is that
yeah,
kind of
exactly?
Approach?
And it's really just about trying to preserve a kind of sense of wonder for
okay.
me. If I know a little too much about what's going on, you know, part of this problem is that I write very much for myself. I'm writing to find out what happens next. And if I know what happens next a little too thoroughly, then part of my brain decides, oh, I don't need to write it now because I know. You know, why can't I just beam that straight out of my brain onto the page? Sadly, that technology has not yet been developed.
Not quite there. We don't have the Tommy knockers quite yet. But Peter, you're four books into this series, and from the panel yesterday, I gather your style is more similar to mine. You outline heavily and do repeated outlines before you write?
Yeah, it's interesting because I love Naomi's books, but we are polar opposites creatively, and it's kind of amazing, actually. I outline everything in great detail. So, for instance, right now I'm working on book five, The Core, which is the last book in the Demon Cycle series. I have been working on that book since my book tour ended, so I've been on it for about 2 months now. I have about 65 pages of outline, where I have a very detailed, like, chapter one bulleted list of everything that happened. You know, this happens, this happens, this happens. Sometimes if I think of a witty bit of dialogue for something, I'll write that in. If I think of a cute little metaphor, I'll write it in. But it's mostly very detailed, like, this person's POV, these things happen, you know, and then a section break, and then these things happen, section break, chapter two, this person, switch to this person's POV, these things happen. And I do that all the way to the end of the book. And so, and I will rewrite that several times. Like, I have the discovery process, I guess, during that outlining phase, where I'm deciding exactly what happens all the way from the beginning to the end. And then I'll go through that again and again. And then I have to turn in what we call progress materials for Del Rey, like, as part of my contract. You know, I think a quarter of my payment comes when I turn in progress materials.
Interesting. Okay.
And according to my agent, those progress materials could be a page, but I usually turn in a 100-page outline of exactly everything that's going to happen in the book.
Do you get a lot of feedback at that point? Do they help catch things in the outline?
No. I usually tell them not to read it, and they usually don't. because at that point, it's still very much my personal story. But I need to know exactly where things are going, like ironclad adamantium skeleton of the story, before I can move ahead. Because when I start writing the prose, so like at this point I'll have 100, 150 pages of outline and no prose at all. And then I start layering the prose on over that, and that's the part where I start to say, okay, now how do the characters feel about all the stuff that's going on?
Right.
How can I, like, get into their heads emotionally, get into their bodies physically, and convey to the reader exactly what they're going through as they go through these things that I already know are going to happen? And that, I think, it's not fun the way Naomi talks about writing is, like, fun and discovery, and once it stops being fun, she doesn't want to do it anymore. I kind of, like, don't want to do it from the start. Like, but I get up and go in and say, all right, I know it's going to happen. Let me get into the headspace of this person and outline that. I think that grew out of how I wrote the first book. I wrote the first book on the subway riding to and from work on my phone because I didn't have any other writing time, and I really wanted to be a writer. I really wanted to publish this book. And so I wrote a detailed outline and broke it into chapters because the one chapter was the biggest file that my phone could handle at the time. This was like 2006. And so I would work a chapter at a time, and I needed that detailed outline of what was going to happen so that I could keep the individual chapter files small and then paste them all back together.
That was going to be a question back to Naomi. Now, I also, when I started my writing career, was working many, many hours at a job and really had to maximize, well, I need to get this done. Now that I've finished the first book, which I spent, you know, half my life writing, and then for the second book, like, I only have so much time in the day. I need to maximize that time. And I think a lot of the people who are going to be listening to the interview in this far have that constant battle of, where do I find time to write? So with you, was there a time where it's fun, this is just how I write, or is this luxury of writing and then I'm going to get rid of these 50 pages, they just don't work anymore? Is that a luxury of the level you're at in your career?
Well, I do write full time at this point. My time has obviously gotten much more constrained since I became a parent. And, you know, it has been a challenge. But the thing is, for me, it's sort of interesting because the way I have to budget my time, when I am in kind of a state of flow, as I would describe it, when I'm having fun and the words are coming easily, I write easily 10 times faster.
Okay.
I have done 10,000 words in a day, just sitting at my computer in a single day. And in fact, when that happens, usually those 10,000 words are barely going to get edited. Because when it's coming to me really easily, really naturally, I write incredibly fast.
Okay.
And so for me, in fact, the sort of time budgeting issue is, how can I get myself into flow? How can I make my brain kind of get into that state where it's coming and I almost don't have to think about it. And so in a way, I think we're both trying to do the same thing. We're kind of trying to maximize our productivity. Mm-hmm. But for me, the way I do that is by trying to find ways to get into flow. And I do sometimes have serious difficulty, especially the way that my time is now interrupted as a parent. Your days just gets broken up. And I used to be able to sit at the computer and sit for 14 hours mm-hmm. in a day, and I can't now. But I still, I've been finding various tricks. I usually find that for each book, I have to find a new kind of mental trick. Like for one of my books, I used Write or Die. I don't know if you know that
app.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
And it basically is something where, you know, if you stop writing, it starts flashing sirens in your face, basically. And for some reason, that really kind of worked for me for that mm-hmm. book. But then it stops working. Another book, the most recent one, League of Dragons, I found that writing longhand somehow seemed to unlock it.
Oh, you're giving me.
Yeah, no.
I'm starting to shake with fear.
I suddenly have like six notebooks full of longhand writing.
I could do that. I wouldn't be able to read them, but I'm sure that would be a fun process.
Well, what I do is I write it and then I transcribe it almost immediately.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, it's interesting because I found that what was happening was it started turning into shorthand very quickly, and then a lot of editing happened in the transcribing process.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
You know, which is really interesting because I do a lot of editing as I type.
Mm-hmm.
I change sentences multiple times in the first time I write them down, but I didn't sort of notice myself doing it until I was transcribing the longhand.
Okay.
Because the longhand, I just write it and then.
Well, I often have that same experience of you get into the zone. All of a sudden you're rolling and 10 hours have gone by. I've done it mostly on the road. I was in Las Vegas on deadline and sat down at the desk. Windows right here. By the time I got up, the sun had gone down and I was completely unaware that, like, how did 10 hours go by? Peter, do you get in the zone, and what does that do when you're doing a strict outline? Do you ever branch off of an outline when you're well into the project, and how do you handle that?
I don't so much anymore. With the first book, The Warded Man, the first draft of that book, I tried to sell and couldn't sell. And there was a reason I couldn't sell it. The book totally goes off the rails in the third act.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it did was because I wrote it as a discovery writer. I didn't plot it out. And so that was when I started really saying, like, no, I need to know where this is going. And I think some of this is a difference in the type of books that we write. I think you and Naomi write much shorter books than I do.
Mm-hmm.
My shortest book is 185,000 words.
Okay.
My longest one is 268. And so, like, And I have multiple POV characters where I think I know Naomi for the most part only had one, and then has added. I think you have Temeraire now as well, but you don't get into the heads of all of the other characters. And so I think when you have that many POV characters that you have to keep track of, and you need to keep them all marching more or less towards the same end goal that you already know about.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that freedom to sort of play fast and loose with what's going to happen. And so I go through my outline again and again and again until I'm sure that I know that, like, we've got a satisfying conclusion for all of these different character arcs. And that's not to say that sometimes in the middle of a book I won't have an amazing idea and decide, like, oh, you know what, I can cut out this idea I had and put this other thing in its place, because that certainly does happen,
mm-hmm.
but it happens less and less, I think, the further along in my career I get. As far as inspiration goes, I think some of this, again, comes from how I wrote that first book, where I had to be able to write during my commute. So I had to learn to flip on my creative switch at, you know, 7:30 a.m. in the morning
mm-hmm.
for 45 minutes, flip it back off, you know, sort of think about the book during my day job, like in the back of my head, and then at rush hour at 5 o'clock or whatever, I'd get back on the subway and need to flip that creative switch back on. Mm-hmm. And I learned that with practice, you can do that whether you're feeling in the zone or not. There are certainly times when I feel in the zone and I feel really confident and I write faster and with more confidence, but it's a job, and sometimes you got to do your job even when you don't feel like it.
Shortening the time between starting and when you're actually writing solid, keepable copy, that becomes an important thing.
What do you mean? I'm sorry?
Well, I have a startup time. I sit down to write, stare at the computer, I start writing, and it may be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes before it actually starts to flow. And
sure.
When you were in your discovery writer mode, shortening that time, like I'm sitting down, I'm on the subway, boom, I got to be on point and going.
Well, because I can, what I would do is I'll sit down and I will read, the first thing I'll do is read the next bullet point. So like I'll X out or strike through each bullet point as I cover it in the prose. And I'll usually cut it and paste it back to the bottom of the file so it's not in the way. And so the first thing I do when I sit down is I'll read the next couple of bullet points so that I know what I'm supposed to write about that day. And then I'll go back and reread what I wrote the day before to sort of get me back in the zone. And then I just keep on writing as if I hadn't stopped. And so jump to whatever the next bullet points that I know are going to happen and then cover that.
So you began, you started out as a discovery writer, learned you needed an outline and become very adept at using outlines. Naomi, did you start out with outlines and find out you're a discovery writer, or has it always been you've done it this way for forever?
No, you know, what happened for me, well, actually, so I do sometimes outline now, partly because Random House put, you know, that sort of progress thing in my contract as well. They wanted an outline.
Uh-huh.
I think it's basically for accounting purposes. They want to break up the payments a little bit more, so it's very pro forma, and you can give them a page. Yeah, I mean, you know, and I do like, you know, a page and a half outline. That's usually
okay.
What I've done for the last three books. But again, I jettison about at least half the outline. With book 9, in fact, I had written an outline and I'd stopped because I'd written the outline and submitted it on time, but I stopped to write Uprooted.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to the outline and I realized the outline was not good enough for the final book of the series. And I tossed the entire outline, rewrote it, sent it to my editor saying, look, totally new book. And she was like, okay. And you know, the thing that did happen for me is at some point I made a transition from writing vignette level, because I wrote for my own pleasure. I wrote fanfic as a hobby,
mm-hmm,
for 10 years before I ever even tried to write anything particular, anything professionally. And what happened in between was I worked on a computer game. On a computer game, you have to make a lot of decisions up front. You have to nail down certain things so that the artists can get to work.
Mm-hmm.
And you build a kind of skeleton. And for some reason, the process of doing that, it didn't make me an outliner, but having done it once, you know, sort of having, it felt like deconstructing something, you know, like taking something apart to see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was like, oh, now I do know how it works. Something in my brain kind of clicked. And from that point,
once you got hands on, that made more sense.
Right.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I sort of feel like I have a better understanding of how a piece of fiction, a longer piece of fiction, works,
mm-hmm,
in a kind of engineering level. And you know, I don't know, I'm a software engineer, so I sort of think of design patterns as applying to this, and that I sort of have something in kind of the back of my head,
mm-hmm,
you know, it's like, to translate it into coding, you know, the model view controller pattern. I don't have to think about it, I don't have to write it out to kind of have an intuitive idea of how I'm going to make the book work.
Excellent.
So
excellent.
That...
landmarks. Do you have landmarks that you like sort of will say like, okay, I'm aiming for that, I'm aiming for this?
The landmarks come, you know, for Uprooted, for instance, I worked out the landmarks after I'd written that first 15,000 words or so. And then I started working toward those landmarks. And sometimes I found that as I got closer to them, I decided I don't actually want to go to that landmark. I've seen a better one come into view over there. It's very much, you know, I do like having a kind of goal to work towards. Sometimes I have a particular set piece that hits me really vividly, a scene, and I use it as kind of a carrot. Like, I really want to write that scene. Yeah. And so I'm trying to get there, and that really motivates me because I don't let myself skip ahead and write it.
Mm-hmm. And I do jump around through the outline a lot. Like, well, I know this scene, so I'll write that and then back up all the points, that all the foreshadowing and character development that lead to that scene, working the way it's written. So I'll use the detailed outline and jump all over the place. It gets you into trouble, though.
No, I generally don't. I write straight through. Okay. And again, that obviously connects to the discovery part of it.
Well, we all have some panels to go to. And Peter, if you could tell everybody where they can find your work, and also tell them what book they should start with for you. With the one series, I guess they're going to start with the work.
You can use the easiest way to get in touch with me, find me, like, be up to date with whatever I'm doing is on Twitter. So I'm at PVBrett, PVBrett. But you can also go to my website, www.petervbrett.com. I also have a Facebook page. Just type in Peter Brett on Facebook and you'll find me. So I basically have the one main series, which is The Demon Cycle, which has four novels out right now, and I'm working on the fifth and final one. There's also three novellas that are published by Subterranean Press, and two of them are actually coming out next month combined, The Great Bazaar and Brian's Gold, from Tachyon Press as a mass market paperback. So if you read paper books, you can try that. That's a good introduction to the world without committing to the overall series. Mm. The first book is The Warded Man, though, and that book has a firm beginning, middle, and an end. So you can read that book and only that book and walk away with a satisfying story. But if you're into it, you can then go on. And, you know, kind of by the time you're finished with the second book, then you're locked into the larger story as well. I also wrote a series of comics for Dynamite called Red Sonja Unchained, which is collected in a trade paperback. So if you're into comics, you might want to try that too.
Excellent. And Naomi, what do you suggest? Should they start with Uprooted or start with the first book in the
series? I feel like
it
depends on what sort of, which strikes your fancy more. Uprooted is obviously the book that I have just written is always the book that I love the best. Uh-huh. So I'm almost done with League of Dragons. So that's kind of, but you can't start with League of Dragons. So Uprooted is out right now. Mm-hmm. And His Majesty's Dragon is the first book in the Temeraire series. I'm on Twitter at Naomi Novik, and I'm also on Tumblr as Naomi Novik, on Facebook, and my website's naominovik.com.
Excellent.
As well.
And spell that out.
NaomiNovik.
Great. Well, thank you, guys. I'm sure that the listeners, the creators and storytellers who are listening to this will appreciate the professional insight into outlining versus not outlining. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You have been listening to The Friday Fix. Content in this broadcast is copyright of Empty Set Entertainment. For more information on author Scott Sigler and for free weekly audio fiction, visit scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song City of Angels by The Distillers off the album Sing Sing Death House.